there was very, very little attention paid to the Albanian labour migration that took place really off the radar of the authorities up until the 1980s.
You're listening to the Transformative Podcast, brought to you by the Research Center for the History of Transformations at the University of Vienna.
This is the Transformative Podcast of the Research Center for the History of Transformations. My name is Jelena Đurejinović. In this episode, we are talking about the phenomenon of Yugoslav-Albanian labor migration during socialism. My guest today is Dr. Rory Archer, a social historian of 20th century Southeast Europe, whose work focuses on labor history and gender history in socialism, housing, everyday life, and popular culture. Among other things, Rory leads a research project about the intra-Yugoslav-Albanian migration, funded by the Austrian Science Foundation, which is why we are talking about this subject today. Hi, Rory. Thank you for being here with me today.
Hi, Elena. Thanks very much for the invitation.
So during the socialist period, many Albanians migrated in search of work from Kosovo and Macedonia to other parts of Yugoslavia, mostly to the country's northwest. Why did these people migrate? What did they do?
Well, there's a very long tradition of labor migration in the Yugoslav space in general and in and from Kosovo and Macedonia in particular. This was usually due to economic necessity. So it was part of an extended family household strategy. Some men would migrate temporarily, on a kind of an annual basis for a few months or for longer periods for a number of years, sending remittances back home then to support the family. Of course, Kosovo and Macedonia are amongst the least developed parts of Yugoslavia. There was, in the 20th century, consistently very high unemployment, quite large families, sort of pressure on the land, lack of arable land as well. So this is a kind of a very long tradition known as Pečalba in Serbian or Gurbet in Albanian. But there was also a political element to it at times too. If we think back to Kosovo in particular after World War II, right up until the mid-1960s, it was a very difficult place to live for many Albanians. This was under Serbian minority rule. It was a de facto sort of coercive police state under Aleksandar Ranković. And so when I am thinking of the Albanians that I've been speaking with, so I'm thinking now, let's say a data set of about 40 or so oral history interviews that I've conducted with Albanian labor migrants, mostly in Croatia. While most of them would cite economic factors as sort of, being the most important reason that they or their family members migrated to Croatia, for some, this political situation was a factor as well. So some people, found the situation very difficult and then found it preferable to live and work in somewhere like Croatia or Slovenia. I should mention, too, that there was also tradition of labor migration to Belgrade and central Serbia as well. But then as relations got more difficult in from 1980s onwards, then Croatia and Slovenia became even more important destinations.
Many of these people were owners or workers in small, privately owned businesses. Could you explain a bit this phenomenon that could be unfamiliar to some of our listeners of the private sector that existed within Yugoslav state socialism?
Of course, yeah. So Albanians, Yugoslav Albanians, when I'm speaking about Albanians, I'm only speaking about Yugoslav citizens of Albanian ethnicity. So not from Albania proper, because at the time under socialist Albania was virtually a closed state. So at that time, Albanian migrants from Albania itself didn't feature in this labor migration. Regarding the private sector in Yugoslavia, so the private sector in socialist Yugoslavia, it was legal, but quite marginal. There's faced a lot of official and unofficial disapproval, particularly in compared to the social sector of the Yugoslav economy. And so this would be equivalent to the state sector in other state socialist countries. And it was quite small. So it was, really a couple of percentage points of the country's, say, GDP. And the private sector was subject to different rules and regulations at different levels, from the federal, republican, municipal. And these changed, changed over time quite a bit. So it was quite unstable. And it tended to be associated with agriculture. But amongst the protagonists that I'm speaking about, Albanian labor migrants, Most of them are working in small businesses like bakeries, cafes, small restaurants, ice cream parlors, jewelers, fruit and vegetable stalls. These are the kind of the most common businesses. So these are something which, still today is often associated with Albanians. Now, the private sector was legal, but it didn't really kind of, cohere or line up with the sort of a mainstream understanding of Yugoslav socialist morality. So it was a little bit suspicious to be a private worker. It was sort of seen as a little bit outside of the norm. And it also had like some practical consequences, because if we think of the Yugoslav political system, this really operated through the social sector workplace. So this is how people would kind of, gain their sort of participatory rights within that system. And then if one is employed in the private sector, you're kind of excluded from that largely. So it had a kind of practical implications too. But despite this kind of degree of marginality, private sector workers, could succeed in running businesses. And there were, very many quite successful business people, particularly in the 1980s when, Yugoslavia entered a very severe economic crisis. And we saw a huge contraction of the economy. But actually, this is the period that a lot of private sector workers, did quite well. I was going to say, kind of a safety valve for the mainstream of the economy. So it's a kind of a strange sector.
How did the Yugoslav authorities see the Albanian labor migration?
Well, the Yugoslav authorities, they really paid very little regard to domestic Albanian labor migration. So Albania, the migration of Albanians within the country. And if we compare this to international labor migration, so the so-called Gastarbeiter labor migration from the 1960s onwards, the Yugoslav authorities paid a huge amount of attention to this, at all different kind of levels, politically, culturally. And compared to this, there was very, very little attention paid to the Albanian labor migration. I would say it's something that took place really, off the radar of the authorities up until the 1980s. So Croatia is the case that I'm looking at most closely. And when I'm writing, I argue that there was actually so little interest in Albanian labor migration until 1981 that these migrants were really institutionally invisible. So, the migration was taking place really externally to the party state. And I've mentioned 1981 as a kind of key year here because we see almost overnight, a huge overnight shift. So what happened was, in the spring of 1981, in March and April, student demonstrations took place in Pristina and then spread to other towns and cities across Kosovo. And this was, a huge national crisis. And the Yugoslav federal authorities interpreted this as Albanian nationalism irredentist. So this was the kind of the official view. This was how it was. This is how it was to be interpreted. What happened then was authorities at all different levels, federal, republican, right down to the level of the local municipality, they started to follow the activities of Albanian labor migrants really closely all across the country, including in Croatia. So this would involve organizations at very different levels, from sort of the Croatian League of Communists at the republican level, going right down to the Municipal League of Communists and local police. The secret police, of course, were very visible and very active as well in tracking this so-called Albanian nationalism irredentism. And so the result was that, from being a completely institutionally invisible phenomenon up until the early 1980s, within a period of a couple of weeks, Albanian labor migration became really securitized. And this actually remained throughout the 1980s until the collapse of the state.
If we look at the communities where these Albanian labor migrants migrated to in Croatia and Slovenia, we are talking about a large number of people and also a large number of these small businesses that really existed in the most remote places, and many of them exist still today. How did these communities where the Albanian labor migrants relocated, how did they perceive them?
Well, I would say it depends when and where. It's quite, first of all, like Albanian labor migrants, I mean, it's a category I think that has to be used with some caution because this is, it's a very, very heterogeneous category. So it's full actually of maybe micro communities of thinking of sort of the religious background of the people concerned, whether they're Muslim or Catholic or unobservant. There's a huge range of class positions. So, sort of running the gauntlet between quite wealthy business owners, landowners, and then, also including extremely poor and precarious day laborers, so, working off the books completely. And then, the place of origin, of course, is important. If this is somewhere in Kosovo, somewhere in Macedonia. And also then, I think, the community is structured to some way by profession. So there's maybe micro communities of jewelers, silversmiths, goldsmiths, bakers, sweet shop owners. and also the importance of family and kin groups. And also, you know, many Albanian labor migrants were, let's say, normative Yugoslavs, people who sort of, you know, signed up to the kind of official and unofficial postulates of Yugoslav socialist modernity, and then became, you know, completely integrated within their local communities, and, you know, very much identifying as local Istrians or local, you know, Pula people or Rijeka people. And so there's, yeah, it's difficult to speak of one single community. And then it's also quite difficult to, you know, to speak of, you know, how the reception that people got. I think a lot of these, you know, a lot of these sort of public facing businesses, people would sort of, you know, gain a sort of, you know, trust in the local community, particularly for things like, you know, cafes or bakeries where people have a lot of sort of face to face interaction. But it could also be, you know, different periods of distance as well. So it's, yeah, I think it depends where and when.
And you, in your research project, you approach the intra-Yugoslav Albanian labor migration through the lens of intersectionality. Could you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, I could, of course. I mean, like I mentioned, these, you know, these very different kind of, you know, micro communities or identity categories, there's, you know, quite a lot going on. And so I see that there are multiple minority statuses which rendered Albanians in Yugoslavia in general, and Croatia in particular, institutionally invisible and unprotected. So on the one hand, you know, of course, there's being being an ethnic minority, but also being an economic minority for those who are working in the private sector as well. And so, yeah, I understand intersectionality as the interaction between gender, race and ethnicity, class and other categories of difference in individuals' lives, and the outcome of these interactions or intersections in terms of power and material status. I mean, of course, this is something which has its intellectual origins in Black feminist theory and activism in North America. But I think it's, you know, it's a sufficiently elastic framework and can be quite fruitful. You know, it's not something which is temporally or spatially circumscribed. So I find this a kind of a useful way to approach it, trying to avoid kind of, to, you know, overly homogenizing a category of labor migrants or seeing it as one kind of coherent group, but to see these, you know, different things taking place and interacting with each other, leading to particular material outcomes. And of course, yeah, within this, you know, this broad category of Albanian labor migrants, of course, there was, you know, internal differences, sometimes, you know, prejudices and divisions within the group as well. This is, becomes clear looking at the sources and, you know, when interviewing people as well.
Maybe we could briefly reflect on the legacies of the Albanian labor migration during state socialism, after state socialism, and today.
Well, I find it difficult to speak about legacies because I see it as a process that's to some degree still ongoing, in that there's, you know, there are many of the businesses that I mentioned in state socialism, they still exist today, and they're still sort of, you know, transforming themselves. You know, the new generation is coming along. I mean, the sort of the labor migration reached its peak towards the end of the 1980s. So in overall terms, the numbers of Albanian labor migrants in Croatia at least is much lower than it was in those last years before Croatian independence. So I suppose, yeah, the sort of the ongoing sort of businesses and communities is that legacy. On the other hand, I think there's still quite a lot of open questions. I mean, for those of us who are social historians of Yugoslavia in particular, because on the eve of Yugoslavia's dissolution, Albanians were the third or the fourth largest nationality in the country after Serbs, Croats, and possibly after Bosniaks or then Muslims as well, because the last full census was in 1981. The 1991 census was boycotted by Albanians due to political difficulties at the time. But, you know, this is a group which was one of the largest of the Yugoslav population. And I think when we think about sort of the experiences of Yugoslavia and legacies, often the Albanian perspectives are not really very well accounted for in social history, at least. I think it may be a little bit different when we think of, you know, political histories where Kosovo features very prominently. But in terms of, you know, sort of creating knowledge about Yugoslavia and the sort of, you know, legacies, I think we still know quite little about this in regard to Albanian Yugoslavs.
This brings us to the end of our conversation. Rory, thank you again for taking time to talk to me today.
Thank you very much, Ella. It was a pleasure.
This was the Transformative Podcast of the Research Center for the History of Transformations, this time with Jelena Jurejnović and Rory Archer.